In 1969, a young Vietnam veteran named Tom arrived at my clinic, haunted by nightmares and unable to control his violent impulses. Despite having physically returned from war, his mind remained trapped in combat. "I feel like I died in Vietnam," he told me, his words echoing what I would hear from countless trauma survivors over the next 5 decades. This groundbreaking book by psychiatrist Bessel van der Kolk has become a cultural phenomenon since its 2014 publication, selling over 2 million copies and remaining on bestseller lists for years. Celebrities from Lady Gaga to Prince Harry have cited its profound impact on their understanding of personal trauma. What makes this work so revolutionary is its central premise. Trauma isn't just a psychological event. It physically reshapes our bodies and brains, leaving an imprint that conventional talk therapy often can't reach. Trauma fundamentally alters how we process the world around us. When we experience overwhelming threat, our brain's alarm system, centered in the amygdala, activates a cascade of stress hormones and nervous system responses designed for immediate survival. This includes the release of cortisol and adrenaline, increased heart rate, rapid breathing, and heightened sensory awareness. In normal circumstances, this system resets once danger passes, returning to baseline within hours. But in trauma, something goes terribly wrong. The system remains chronically activated. Brain imaging studies reveal what happens during flashbacks. The rational, verbal parts of the brain, particularly Broca's area, shut down while emotional centers hyperactivate. The prefrontal cortex, responsible for logical thinking and emotional regulation, shows decreased activity while the amygdala becomes hyperactive. This explains why trauma survivors often cannot put their experiences into words while simultaneously feeling overwhelmed by physical sensations and emotions. Even years later, trauma survivors may experience wordless terror, with their bodies reacting as if the threat were happening in real time. As van der Kolk explains, trauma is not just an event that took place sometime in the past, it is also the imprint left by that experience on mind, brain, and body. This imprint manifests in predictable ways across multiple body systems. The body remains on high alert, constantly scanning for danger, a state known as hypervigilance. Muscle tension becomes chronic, particularly in the neck, shoulders, and back. Sleep becomes severely disrupted as the brain struggles to integrate traumatic memories, leading to nightmares and insomnia. The immune system often becomes dysregulated, explaining why trauma survivors frequently develop autoimmune conditions like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and inflammatory disorders. Most devastatingly, the capacity to feel safe in one's own body becomes compromised, leading to a profound disconnection from physical sensations. The author describes how one patient, Marilyn, developed lupus after childhood sexual abuse. Her case exemplifies the complex relationship between trauma and autoimmune function. Research confirmed that incest survivors showed abnormal immune functioning, with oversensitive CD45RA cells ready to attack perceived threats, including the body's own tissues. Further studies revealed elevated inflammation markers and disrupted cortisol patterns in trauma survivors. As van der Kolk notes, the body keeps the score. It remembers everything through molecular and cellular changes that persist long after the traumatic events. For trauma survivors, the past is never truly past. It lives on in their biology. A combat veteran might experience full-blown panic at a car backfiring, complete with racing heart, sweating, and combat-ready muscle tension. A childhood abuse survivor might dissociate during intimate moments with a loving partner, their nervous system shutting down in response to perceived threat. A survivor of medical trauma might experience severe anxiety during routine checkups, their blood pressure spiking at the mere sight of medical equipment. These aren't psychological weaknesses, but biological adaptations that once served survival but now prevent full engagement with life. The body's alarm system, designed to protect, becomes a prison that keeps survivors trapped in cycles of reactivity and withdrawal. Modern neuroscience has transformed our understanding of trauma's impact. Using technologies like functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, researchers can now visualize how trauma reshapes the brain's architecture and functioning. When trauma occurs, the brain's information processing system becomes fundamentally altered. The thalamus, what van der Kalk calls the cook, that normally blends sensory inputs into coherent experience, breaks down. This explains why traumatic memories are stored not as coherent narratives, but as fragmented sensory impressions, a smell, a sound, a physical sensation. Meanwhile, the critical balance between the emotional brain, limbic system, and the rational brain, prefrontal cortex, shifts dramatically. The prefrontal cortex, which van der Kalk likens to a watchtower that normally helps us maintain perspective, goes offline during traumatic flashbacks. Without this moderating influence, the emotional brain dominates, making trauma survivors feel as if the danger is happening right now. This neurobiological understanding explains why simply talking about trauma often proves insufficient. As van der Kalk writes, trauma is not stored as a narrative with an orderly beginning, middle, and end, but as fragments of sensory components of the event, as images, sounds, and physical sensations. When these fragments are triggered, the brain's timekeeping system collapses, making it impossible to recognize that the danger belongs to the past. The author illustrates this through the case of Stan and Ute Lawrence, survivors of a horrific 87-car pileup. Brain scans revealed their dramatically different trauma responses. Stan immediately entered a flashback state with an activated amygdala and deactivated prefrontal cortex, the neurosignature of trauma reliving. Ute, meanwhile, completely dissociated, her brain activity markedly decreased. These distinct responses, hyperarousal versus shutdown, represent the two primary ways humans respond when overwhelmed. Perhaps most significantly, trauma disrupts our capacity for self-awareness. Brain imaging studies by Ruth Lanius showed that while normal subjects at rest activated brain areas that create the sense of self, chronic PTSD patients showed almost no activation in these self-sensing areas. This explains why trauma survivors often report feeling dead inside or disconnected from themselves. While acute trauma in adulthood is devastating, developmental trauma, occurring during critical periods of brain development, creates even more profound challenges. Children's brains are exquisitely sensitive to their environments, literally being shaped by their experiences of safety or danger. The landmark Adverse Childhood Experiences ACE study involving over 17,000 middle-class Americans revealed the staggering prevalence and health impacts of childhood trauma. More than a quarter of respondents reported physical abuse, while 28% of women and 16% of men reported childhood sexual abuse. Higher ACE scores correlated with dramatically increased rates of depression, suicide attempts, alcoholism, drug use, and serious physical health problems. When children experience chronic danger without protective caregivers, their developing nervous systems become organized around threat. As van der Kalk explains, being able to feel safe with other people is probably the single most important aspect of mental health. Without this foundation, children develop adaptations that compromise their ability to form healthy relationships, regulate emotions, and develop a coherent sense of self. The Minnesota Longitudinal Study of Risk and Adaptation, tracking 180 children for nearly 30 years, found that the quality of parent-child relationships predicted behavioral problems far better than any other factor. Children with consistent caregiving developed healthy self-regulation, while those with erratic care became chronically physiologically aroused, anxious, and attention-seeking. Most disturbingly, Putnam and Trickett's 20-year study of sexually abused girls found that abuse actually accelerated their biological development, triggering puberty 18 months earlier and producing 3 to 5 times higher levels of sex hormones. This left them physically mature but emotionally unprepared, creating vulnerability to further exploitation. Despite overwhelming evidence for developmental trauma's distinct impact, Vanderkalk describes his frustration when the American Psychiatric Association rejected the proposed developmental trauma disorder diagnosis. This rejection means millions of traumatized children continue receiving multiple unrelated diagnoses, ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder, bipolar disorder, that fail to address the core issue, developmental disruption of their stress response systems. One of the most controversial aspects of trauma involves memory, specifically how traumatic memories differ from ordinary recollections. While normal memories are coherent narratives that can be modified and updated, traumatic memories remain frozen in time, stored as sensory fragments that intrude into the present. These intrusions can manifest as vivid flashbacks, nightmares, or sudden physiological reactions to seemingly innocent triggers. The author and his colleagues conducted a systematic study comparing how people recall benign versus traumatic experiences. They found two major differences: how memories were organized and the physical reactions they provoked. While positive memories, like weddings, were recalled as coherent stories with clear beginnings, middles, and ends, traumatic memories remained disorganized and fragmented. Participants vividly remembered sensory details of their traumas: the smell of gunpowder, the texture of clothing, the quality of light, but couldn't recall sequences or vital contextual information. Their bodies would react with increased heart rate, sweating, and muscle tension when accessing these memories, even decades later. This research confirmed what trauma pioneer Pierre Janet observed a century earlier. Traumatic memories are fundamentally different from autobiographical stories. They remain dissociated, with sensations not properly assembled into narrative. This explains why trauma survivors may simultaneously remember too little, lacking a coherent story, and too much, being overwhelmed by sensory flashbacks. Janet noted that traumatized individuals often struggle to integrate their experiences into their life stories, instead experiencing them as ever-present threats. The phenomenon of dissociation, the mind's capacity to split off overwhelming experiences, explains why some trauma survivors develop amnesia for traumatic events. Linda Meyer Williams conducted a groundbreaking study following 206 girls documented as sexual abuse victims, finding that 17 years later, 38% didn't recall the documented abuse. Women who were younger when abused or molested by someone they knew were more likely to have forgotten. This amnesia served as a protective mechanism, allowing survival in situations where escape was impossible. Vanderkalk describes how Nancy, a nursing director who experienced anesthesia awareness during surgery, illustrates trauma's dual reality. Given insufficient anesthesia but paralyzed by muscle relaxants, she felt every cut while unable to alert the surgical team. Afterward, she developed flashbacks where past and present merge, contaminating even benign objects, and iron became an instrument of torture. She lived what Charlotte Delbo called a dual existence, where the self who experienced trauma feels separate from the present self. This splitting of consciousness allows trauma survivors to function in daily life while carrying the unprocessed horror of their experiences. The implications of these findings extend to treatment approaches. Traditional talk therapy alone often proves insufficient because traumatic memories aren't stored in the brain's narrative centers. Instead, effective treatment must address both the body's physical responses and the mind's fragmented memories. Incorporating approaches like EMDR, sensory motor psychotherapy, and other body-based interventions that help integrate these split-off experiences into a coherent whole. If trauma lives in the body, then healing must involve the body too. Vanderkalk describes how conventional talk therapy, while valuable, often proves insufficient because it primarily engages the rational brain, while trauma is stored in emotional and sensory systems that words can't easily reach. The author outlines several body-centered approaches that have shown remarkable effectiveness. Yoga, for instance, helps trauma survivors reconnect with their bodies in a safe, controlled manner. Research at his trauma center found that yoga significantly reduced PTSD symptoms in medication-resistant patients. Through gentle postures and breathing practices, participants gradually learned to tolerate physical sensations without panic. Annie, a terrified special education teacher with severe childhood abuse, illustrates this approach. Despite years of various therapies and medications, she remained disconnected from her body and prone to self-harm. Through yoga practice, she gradually developed awareness of where she held tension and pain, particularly in her jaw and pelvic region. Over time, she learned to have feelings without being hijacked by them, becoming more present and tolerant of physical touch. Another promising approach is neurofeedback, which provides real-time information about brain activity, allowing patients to retrain dysregulated patterns. The author describes a study with 17 treatment-resistant patients that showed significant improvements in PTSD scores, sleep, emotional balance, and self-awareness after neurofeedback training. For developmental trauma, approaches that address attachment wounds prove particularly valuable. Psychomotor therapy allows people to physically experience what was missing in their early lives: protection, nurturing, being seen, and valued. By positioning group members to represent family figures, participants can express emotions toward these placeholders and create healing ideal parent scenarios that provide visceral experiences of safety. Theater programs offer another powerful healing modality, particularly for adolescents. The Possibility Project transforms traumatized youth by helping them create original musicals based on their life stories. As rehearsals progress, the focus shifts from trauma to competence. How can I become the best actor, singer, dancer I can be? This shift from victimhood to mastery proves crucial for healing. Internal family systems therapy helps trauma survivors identify and integrate the fragmented parts of themselves that emerged as survival adaptations. Rather than seeing symptoms as problems to eliminate, this approach recognizes them as protective responses that need understanding and integration. Throughout the book, van der Kolk emphasizes that trauma fundamentally involves disconnection from oneself, from one's body, and from other people. This disconnection manifests in various ways: emotional numbness, physical dissociation, social isolation, and an inability to form or maintain close relationships. Consequently, healing requires reconnection on all these levels through a carefully orchestrated process that addresses both the psychological and physiological aspects of trauma. The author draws extensively on Stephen Porges' polyvagal theory to explain how safety and danger are biologically processed through interactions between our bodies and other people. Our nervous systems are exquisitely attuned to subtle emotional shifts in others, detecting microscopic changes in facial expressions, voice tonality, and body language. When we receive messages of safety through these channels, our nervous system downregulates, allowing us to relax and engage. This biological attunement reveals how minimally we exist as individual organisms. Our brains are fundamentally built for tribal connection, shaped by millions of years of evolution as social creatures. Social support provides the strongest protection against becoming overwhelmed by stress and trauma. Multiple longitudinal studies show that having a secure social network is more important for trauma recovery than the severity of the traumatic event itself. People with strong social connections show greater resilience, faster recovery times, and lower rates of PTSD. As van der Kolk notes, being able to feel safe with other people is probably the single most important aspect of mental health. This safety serves as a foundation for all other therapeutic work. This understanding has profound implications for treatment approaches. While individual therapy remains valuable, approaches that foster social connection and synchrony offer unique healing opportunities. Group activities like choral singing, theater, and team sports help restore the sense of attunement and belonging that trauma destroys. These activities create what van der Kolk calls collective rhythm, where participants synchronize their movements, breathing, and emotional states with others, directly counteracting the isolation of trauma. The author describes witnessing the transformative power of rhythm when South African rape survivors moved from collapsed, frozen states to vitality through communal singing and dancing. These women, initially withdrawn and disconnected, gradually came alive through shared movement and voice. Similar transformations occur in drama therapy groups, where trauma survivors embody different roles and stories, expanding their emotional repertoire and sense of possibility. These collective experiences help trauma survivors feel part of something larger than their individual suffering, providing both comfort and perspective. Van der Kolk emphasizes that social healing extends beyond formal therapy settings. Community gardens, religious congregations, sports teams, and volunteer groups can all provide the essential ingredients of connection, rhythm, and shared purpose. The key is finding ways to help trauma survivors safely re-engage with others, gradually rebuilding their capacity for trust and intimacy through experiences of collective attunement and support. In the epilogue, van der Kolk presents a stark assessment of trauma as America's most pressing public health crisis, with sobering statistics showing domestic violence and gun deaths dramatically outpacing both military casualties and major diseases. Each year, more Americans die from domestic abuse and gun violence than died in the entire Vietnam War. Yet these traumas often remain invisible in public health discussions. The author emphasizes how we artificially separate trauma from its broader societal context, treating individual cases while ignoring systemic causes. The author's assertion that your zip code, even more than your genetic code, determines whether you will lead a safe and healthy life is supported by extensive research showing how environmental factors shape trauma exposure. In disadvantaged neighborhoods, the compounding effects of poverty, unemployment, substandard housing, and easy access to weapons create cycles of trauma that echo through generations. Children growing up in these environments experience toxic stress levels up to 10 times higher than their more privileged peers, with measurable impacts on brain development and future life outcomes. The concept of Ubuntu, meaning my humanity is inextricably bound up in yours, offers a framework for understanding trauma's communal nature. This South African philosophy challenges the Western emphasis on individualized treatment approaches that focus solely on correcting faulty thinking. Instead, van der Kolk advocates for institutional reforms that prioritize emotional safety and engagement. This means creating environments where trauma survivors can safely explore new ways of being, relating, and healing within supportive communities. Schools emerge as crucial focal points for trauma intervention. When properly equipped, they can serve as safe havens amid chaos, particularly for children from troubled homes. The author details specific practices that transform school environments. Personally greeting each child by name, implementing daily emotional check-ins, teaching mindfulness and emotional awareness, and incorporating regular movement and breathing exercises. Through structured activities like team sports, musical ensembles, and drama programs, children develop crucial resilience skills by experiencing agency, cooperation, and community belonging. The author illustrates trauma's paradoxical nature through powerful examples of resilience. Public figures like Oprah Winfrey, who survived childhood abuse, Maya Angelou, who overcame racial and sexual assault, Nelson Mandela, who endured 27 years of imprisonment, and Elie Wiesel, who survived the Holocaust, transformed their traumatic experiences into forces for social change. Their stories demonstrate how personal trauma can fuel passionate advocacy and societal transformation. Similarly, collective traumas have catalyzed major social reforms. The Civil War's devastation led to slavery's abolition. The Great Depression's hardships spawned Social Security and labor protections. And World War II's aftermath produced the GI Bill, transforming American education and housing. These examples show how society can channel trauma's energy into constructive change. Van der Kalk concludes with an optimistic challenge. Modern science, psychology, and social research have given us unprecedented understanding of trauma's impacts and effective treatments. The question now is whether we will marshal the collective will to implement these solutions at scale. The author envisions a future where trauma-informed practices permeate our institutions, creating a society better equipped to prevent trauma and support healing, ultimately restoring individuals' capacity for joy, meaningful connection, and full engagement with life. At its core, The Body Keeps the Score offers a revolutionary framework for understanding human suffering. Trauma isn't simply a past event, but an ongoing physiological reality that shapes how we experience ourselves and the world. When terrible things happen, they don't just affect our thoughts, they fundamentally reorganize our biology. This reorganization manifests in measurable changes to brain structure, hormone levels, and nervous system functioning, creating patterns that can persist for decades after the original trauma. The book demonstrates how trauma literally rewires the brain's alarm systems, particularly in regions like the amygdala and hippocampus. For instance, trauma survivors often exhibit heightened activity in the brain's fear center and reduced function in areas responsible for language and self-awareness. These biological changes explain why trauma survivors might react with overwhelming panic to seemingly minor triggers, or why they might struggle to put their experiences into words. This perspective dramatically shifts our understanding of many mental health problems. Depression, anxiety, addiction, and even some physical illnesses may represent adaptations to trauma rather than discrete disorders. What looks like a chemical imbalance may actually be a nervous system shaped by overwhelming experiences. For example, a child who experiences chronic neglect might develop hypervigilance as a survival mechanism, which later manifests as anxiety or attention problems. Similarly, addiction often begins as an attempt to manage overwhelming emotions and physical sensations related to past trauma. Yet the book's ultimate message is one of profound hope. The same neuroplasticity that allows trauma to reshape our brains also makes healing possible. Through approaches that engage the body, regulate the nervous system, and restore social connection, even deeply traumatized individuals can reclaim their lives. Van der Kalk presents numerous case studies of successful recovery, from veterans using yoga to manage PTSD symptoms to survivors of childhood abuse finding their voice through theater and movement therapy. The book emphasizes that healing from trauma requires a holistic approach that goes beyond traditional talk therapy. This might include somatic experiencing, EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, neurofeedback, and various forms of body-based therapies. These methods help people reconnect with their bodies, regulate their emotional responses, and rebuild their capacity for healthy relationships. As Van der Kalk writes in the final pages, trauma is now our most urgent public health issue, and we have the knowledge to respond effectively. The choice is ours to act on what we know. By integrating cutting-edge neuroscience with ancient wisdom about the healing power of community, rhythm, and embodied awareness, we can transform how we understand and treat the deepest wounds of the human experience.